Well, we're continuing our study in the book of Deuteronomy, or in Spanish, Deuteronomio. And we are turning on our clicker so we can advance the slides. Here is our outline for the book, and we're looking at some more laws, and specifically tonight, this section, 12 through 26. We kind of started this last Wednesday. We didn't quite get through chapter 13, so we're going to start in chapter 13. And as we're going through the book of Deuteronomy, are you picking up on some repeat themes? What does he say, or what are some things that you remember him saying often? Remember is a big one. Remember. And so those are the three R's of remembering. So what else did we, what are some other things that we pick up on? What's that? You shall. We have some you shalls in here. This is law, right? This is what we're talking about. These are the things you must do. What else did you? Be faithful. When you go into the land and you get all these things, be faithful, be obedient. What else? Anything else? Get rid of the idols. We're gonna start there in a moment. Get rid of the idols, warning against idol worship. And just so you know, that continues. That is not going to stop. We're going to keep seeing those themes throughout. Remember that this is Moses, who is not going to get to go into the promised land. I don't know if you've ever told your child, prepared them, had a speech with your child before they leave the house. Maybe they're going to college for the first time, and you have the talk. Right? Or you have some words of wisdom you want to impart with your child in that moment. Well, that's what Moses is kind of feeling. You see that kind of energy here with him, making sure that when you go into these places, be faithful, be obedient. Remember the laws and the ordinances and the judgments of the Lord, and be faithful to those things. And so because of all those things, we're going to see this idea of be careful, warning against other people who might influence them to go away from God. And we see that in chapter 13, a warning against apostasy. And he starts in verse 1, if a prophet or a dreamer of dreams arises among you and gives you a sign or a wonder, and it comes true even if it comes true, the sign or the wonder comes true. And if he says, this rock will be wet tomorrow, right? Obviously with dew and that kind of stuff, it's going to be wet. Anyway, you see what I'm saying? If it comes true, don't go after. If he follows, don't follow something you don't know. Don't listen to his words of that prophet or the dream or the dreams. For the Lord your God is testing you to find out if you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. And this is something that we need to be careful of, understanding that we don't obviously go away following after other things. Even Paul uses a similar language in Galatians chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. If we or an angel from heaven teach unto you any other gospel which you haven't heard, let him be accursed. And I'll say it again, right? And so it's the same kind of idea here, in that even if somebody comes and teaches you something and then they say that this is something is going to happen and you have some sign of some sort, even if that sign comes true, but they're teaching something contrary to what has already been taught, don't follow after. Now, this idea of being tested, Abraham was tested, Genesis chapter 22, verse 1. If you want to write out here, Genesis chapter 22, verse 1 tells us specifically that Abraham was tested by offering his son Isaac. And Hebrews chapter 11, verses 17 through 19 tells us he was tested, but he passed the test. He knew that God was able to even raise him from the dead. So this idea of God testing is okay. It is God approved. The only thing that's not, James says he does not tempt anyone, nor is he tempted by things. So this is very different kind of idea. But the idea is to see what is in your heart and what is in your soul. So if somebody says this, you shall not follow the Lord your God or fear him. You shall follow the Lord your God, fear him, verse 4, and you shall keep his commandments, listen to his voice, serve him, and cling to him. We kind of talked about that idea of clinging to him last time. But in chapter 13, verse 6, if your brother, your mother's son, your daughter, or wife, whom you cherish, not the other wife, your friend who is as your own soul, who are we talking about here? Who are these people who might influence us? These are close people, right? These are people that might really, inner circle people, right? We talk about different rings of friendship and acquaintances. These are inner circle people. If they come to you and tell you or teach something else that's contrary to what you've learned, what does the text tells us to do? They say, entice you secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, whom neither you nor your fathers have known. What does the text tell us? Well, they're nice people, right? They mean well. And I'm sure God doesn't really mean that. Stone them. Not herbally, right? We stone them. They get killed. And so in this situation, they are, even those who are close must perish. Now, that, of course, doesn't translate into we're not stoning people these days, but is this influence still there? Are there people who would, because of family members, because of different things that have happened, turn their backs on what God has taught? You see this a lot when it comes to the concept of marriage. Maybe different family members that have done certain things, maybe we just accept them for who they are. Well, that's not what, when it comes to right teaching, God tells us how we're supposed to live, and then we're talking about people who are members of the church who have done and lived and are living in error and are accepted anyways. And there's New Testament teaching on that as well. So these are something we need to be careful of. Verse 12 of the same chapter. Who are we warning against here? Who are we being warned against? Are we talking about one individual in verse 12? Your neighbors, if you hear in one of your cities, which the Lord your God is giving you to live in, by the way, free real estate, anyone saying that some worthless men have gone out from among you and have seduced the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods, whom you have not known, then you shall investigate and search out and inquire thoroughly if that is true or not, and you shall surely strike the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, utterly destroying it all and its inhabitants, its cattle, the edge of the sword, and then all you shall gather all its wealth into the middle of its open square, burn the city and all its wealth with fire as a whole burnt offering to the Lord, and it shall never be rebuilt. So if a city goes off the rails, if a city goes off the rails and starts teaching things that are contrary, which happened, those things happened, then that city is to be just razed to the ground and destroyed. It is that serious. So when God says, and Moses is saying, do not go after other idols, do not do these things, you shall not, that it might be well with you. This is why, right? You don't want to be one of these cities. It will be destroyed, the name forgotten, and never rebuilt. Wiped as though it never happened. What's that? Oh, yes, God is a jealous God. So we're making sure that these are the repercussions of that commandment, making sure that we're listening, following after God. So as we look at this, chapter 13, I wanted to hit chapter 13. We really didn't get to go into this too much, but we see these different levels of influence. Some random stranger, somebody important to us, whole cities that might do this. This is the importance of following God to the letter of what He wants, and understanding and following Him and being obedient. Chapter 14 starts off with an interesting kind of concept here. Contrary, kind of in juxtaposed to the idolatry that we might see other people following. It says, you are the sons of the Lord your God. That's a huge statement in that one sentence. You are the sons of the Lord your God, and you shall not, and there's going to be a lot of you shall nots, but in this case, these first two verses, we deal with laws, the funerary laws that were connected with idolatry. You shall not cut yourselves or shave your forehead for the sake of the dead. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you to be a people for His own possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. That's again another theme that repeats. We've seen that a couple other times. He said it because you've been chosen, not because you're all that righteous, but because He loved, their forefathers. And He also chose them, He said, because I loved you. And that's why I've chosen you. And in here, I've chosen you. And so over and over again, we get this idea of there are chosen people, a chosen people, a chosen people. And then we get into the time of Jesus' day, and all these guys are walking around with their thumbs, in there like this, we are the chosen people. Why? Because they've been told that the whole time they are the chosen people. And they are. right? They're not wrong, but that can go to a person's head if you get told all the time that you're a chosen individual. So they are the chosen one, but to bring about the Christ, and if they were paying attention, it was to be a blessing to all nations. So here is what they did. Now, we get into some laws here about eating, about what they can and can eat, and what you shall and shall not eat. I guess keeping with the language. You shall not eat any detestable thing. And I think we're all in agreement with that, right? I would not eat a detestable thing. You guys eat anything detestable on a regular basis? No. Or I doubt it. You guys are looking at me like, what in the world? Barbecue tarantulas, anybody? Y'all doing that? People do it. People eat that. It's gross. That's detestable. So here are the things, the dietary laws that are reiterated. You are the sons of the Lord your God. Just be that as your header for this chapter. You are the sons of the Lord your God. You don't behave in this way, and these are the things you eat. All right, because you are the sons of the Lord your God. So we give information here about, again, just kind of we've gone over this before. These are the animals which you may eat: the ox, the sheep, the goat, the deer, the gazelle, the roe, the buck, the wild goat, the ibex, the antelope, the mountain sheep. Any animal that divides a hoof, are you hearing this? Divides a hoof and has a hoof split in two and chews the cud. You know, that's kind of the, you can't eat of one that it's just split hoof and you can't eat of one that just chews the cud, which I learned that there were more animals. Reading the Bible, I learned that there are other animals that chew the cud that didn't have, anyway, I didn't know all these things about these animals. And so now we have animals that they have split hooves, but they don't chew the cud. The camel, the rabbit, the chiffon, which is supposed to be like a marmot, possibly. We have the pig as well, can't eat it. Thankfully, later on we can because barbecue, but at this time, you know, we're not able to eat the pig if you belong to and are following after these dietary laws. In verse 9, and you shall eat of all that are in the water, anything that has fins. And so we get on land, we get kind of a surf and turf thing. We get land idea here out of the way. Then we get what's going on in the water. Then we get what we can eat out of the air as far as dietary things. What are the things that you have to have? What is a sea creature, what must they have in order for us to eat it out of the water, according to this text? What's that? Fins and scales. So if it has just fins, right out. If it has scales but no fins, also you can't eat it. Which, well, I don't even know what that would be, but don't eat it. A sea snake maybe, right? Scales, no fins. Okay. So eels. Eels are slimy. Do they have scales? I don't know. But they're slimy. They have fins but no scales, right? So anyway, all kinds of things. That makes it easy. I'm glad it's not color-coded, so that helps. Verse 11, you may eat any clean bird, but these are the ones that you shall not eat. If you look down the list of these birds, what do they have in common? What do most of them have in common? What's that? They're scavengers. You're not eating scavenger birds. And this word here, it talks about teeming. What word do you have in verse 19? It says, all the teeming life with wings. What do you guys have? Do you have another word for other than teeming there? Creeping? Winged insects? That's kind of the idea. Like swarming insects. They may be in the air, but you can't eat those. Those are not ones you can eat. In case you were enticed to do such a thing. So you can't eat those things. But you may eat any clean bird. So they gave you a list of all the things you could not eat. In verse 21, you shall not eat anything which dies of itself. So if you're standing there by your beloved cow and just falls over and dies and you have no idea why it just died, you can't eat it. However, you cannot eat it. You may give it to the alien, right? Who is the alien? Who are the aliens? The strangers, the people who are not of that, you know, are not of Israel. Yes, sir. He eat locusts. They are, and I don't know where that falls, to be honest with you. I can look into that for you. This says flying, we're not, this word here that we have with teeming isn't specific as far as, although the locust might fit in that category, I did not look into the locust side of things. Yes, they have plague of locusts. Yep. Yeah, oh, yeah, they swarm. Yeah, they're swarmers. They travel that way. But I had not looked into what John the Baptist was eating. Honey was good, right? Locusts, I'm not sure. I'll look into that. I'll get next Wednesday, we'll have a definitive answer on that. If you guys are trying to be Google theologians right now, be careful if you're trying to Google that answer. All right. So we look at, and that's like we'll get to that. And I should have maybe brought that up. But you shall not eat anything that dies of itself, but you can, you know, sell it in the market to the aliens, to those who sojourn among you. You can sell it to them. Why does it say here that they're not able to do that, verse 21? Because you're holy. These are, again, because you're the children, you're holy, you're set apart, you're chosen. These are the why of the dietary laws. You know, there's lots of information out there about, oh, God was saving them from this, and God was saving them from that, and God was doing this, and the book None of These Diseases and all kinds of stuff. Isn't that really cool? That's cool. But God said, no, you're doing it because I said so. You're doing it because you're holy and I've set you apart. Maybe there's some science behind it, maybe. But God says, because I want you to. And it may not matter the other things. Also, there's this snippet here. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk, just in case you were thinking about doing that as well. Exodus 23, verse 19, this has been said before. Incidentally, I was watching, have y'all ever watched like those food channel network things? One of them was taboo foods, like in different places. In India, this is still taboo. Like it's taboo to even think about doing this still. But anyway, that's extra for you. All right, we have here some information about tithe. Tithe of produce, verse 22. You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of the field every year, and you shall eat it in the presence. And this is, if you want to write out here, you're supposed to eat it at the place where he chooses to establish his name, which we kind of talked about that in chapter 12 last week. Where is that? What is it? What are we talking about here? At the place where the Lord chooses to establish his name. Where is that? What's that? Y'all are saying it. Yeah, the temple, tabernacle, wherever that is, that's where you have to go to do this. So this is, we're talking about ceremonial, sacrificial kind of meal here. We're not talking about, all right, every time I want to eat, you know, my cereal in the morning, I have to go all the way to the temple to do that. No, we're talking about a specific sacrificial, ceremonial kind of meal that is done at a certain time. But where that must take place is where God has designated it must take place, not where anybody just decides to pull over the side of the road and do this. The tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, and firstborn, so that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. What God is providing, he's providing for these things, and you're going to his holy place, and you're going there to ceremonially eat these things. So you're learning dependence on God. And we're going to see this more through this chapter and others, that what you do, if you are holy, obedient to God, you will be blessed. There is a direct correlation in the Old Testament between my obedience and me doing what God does, national obedience and doing what God says to do, and direct blessing from God. Now, there are those who try and tie that into Christianity today, and that is not necessarily, it's not a direct correlation there. Your blessing, what we're waiting for, is a spiritual Jerusalem, a spiritual rest, right? That's where we're going. And while God does bless the just and the unjust because of the rain and sunshine and those kind of things, that's different. We can't preach that health and wealth gospel. You can't take this and preach this today, that my obedience to God directly correlates with bank account. You can't do that. Theologically, appropriately, I mean, you can, but you'd be wrong, right? You can't do that. Now, that's not saying God does not bless us. I'm just saying you can't. My righteous meter doesn't equal my bank account meter. It doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. But you learn dependence, and you, again, learn divine blessing. Learn to depend on God. Dependence and divine blessing from God. And so we're going to see that in this chapter. He makes provision for if the distance is too far. What does he say here in these next few verses? What provision does God make if the distance is too far? for you to take all your tithe and take all your provisions to this place. What provision is made? Does he say, well, you don't have to go. If it's too far, if you live outside, you know, if you live in Broward, then you're fine. You don't have to go that far. What does he say? Does he say, don't go? It's not what he says. Sell it. Carry the money. Don't carry the produce. Carry the money. Still go. Buy what you need when you get there. Do you see? Buy whatever you want when you get there, but carry the money. So when God has commanded, and we'll see this several different times, and we're going to go over in the next chapter looking at three specific instances where they were commanded to go to where the holy place was. They were commanded to go. And God says, it's too far, I understand, to carry all your tithe. He doesn't say, don't come. He says, I'm just going to make your load lighter. Does that translate into anything today? When are we commanded to come together? Acts 20, verse 7. Are we commanded to come together? One of those instances, I'm getting ahead of myself here, one of those instances is the Passover. They were commanded to come together and partake of the Passover. Is there anything like the Passover that we do, that we're commanded to come together to do? Lord's Supper. Is provision made if it's too far? Are we still commanded to come? Commanded to come. There is important. Go to where the place. The idea, the concept of gathering together is important. And so he makes provision, not for distance, just so that your load's lighter, which I'd be thankful for. I don't know if you guys carried a load very far, but man, I'd be thankful for that. So he makes provision there for them. And you shall not, verse 27, he also makes provision for the Levite that's in your town, for he has no portion or inheritance among you. So the Levite doesn't, when he's going to these places, does he have, what does he have to bring from the tithe of his produce? He doesn't have, he's not going to bring anything. So what's he going to eat when he gets there? Invite the Levite. Don't forget the Levite in your town. What we're seeing in these provisions, guys, we're seeing a transition from wandering obedience, right? Obedience to how it is while we're in our tents and we're wandering, and it wasn't a far trek, probably just a few blocks to go to the tent of meeting. But now we're talking about towns. Have you noticed that transition? Now we're talking about obedience to the law of God when you get into cities and you start living in a different area, you start living in this type of life. Now we have ordinances that are based on these things. And so it's not so much that he's not giving them new instruction, just giving it in the context of now you're in cities, now you're a nation, now you're separate and living in different areas. And so this is why there's more instruction here concerning these things. So from the Levite that's in your town, you have an obligation to the Levite that's in your town. So if God's will was done correctly, every Levite would have several invitations from different families to come and join them in their meal that they had. That's what it was supposed to look like. And then also there's provision here. At the end of every third year, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce. All the tithe of your produce. You shall deposit it in your town. The Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance among you, the alien, the orphan, and the widow, who are in your town, shall come and eat and be satisfied, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all your work and the hand which you do. Does God care about those who are marginalized? Does God care about those who aren't necessarily being able to care for themselves? He does. He does. And how we care for them, God pays attention to that. What we do, and how God pays attention to how we care for these people as well. If you want to write out here, Deuteronomy chapter 26, we'll get to this later on, but Deuteronomy chapter 26, verses 12 through 15 also touches on this. So every third year, this happens in every town. All the food's brought, and those people who don't have, they are able to have every third year, and God provides. He's built this system into the care for his city. Moving into chapter 15 very quickly, we're looking at, it says, what do you guys have in your heading here? What's that? The sabbatical year, right? That's not technically accurate, but that's what's been called and what we've started calling it. But really, it is the year of release is maybe a more accurate term for what this was called. We call it a sabbatical year. It's been commonly termed that, but it is a year of release. If you want to write it here, Leviticus chapter 25. Leviticus 25, 1 through 7 is where we are seeing this before. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant remission of debts. And this is not what some might believe, an idea of all your debts are forgiven. That's a different year. That's not this year. This is a release of obligation to pay. This is a release of that obligation to pay. And we'll see this here in just a second. So this is a suspension of debts. And so this is a manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor, and he shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. So you cannot request collection during this year. You're not able to collect during this year. Now from the foreigner you may exact it, but your hand shall release whatever is yours with your brother. The foreigner still works. Remember in the Sabbath year, in the sabbatical year, if the year of release, what else are we not doing? If you go back over to Leviticus chapter 25, verses 1 through 7, what else are we not doing? We're not planting. We're not sowing, we're not reaping like we were before, we're not pruning to get maximum production out of our area of land. We're going out, it's letting it to go furrow, and just go out and pick whatever grows, but we're not producing like we've done in other years. So this idea of release of debt, all right, you don't have to pay this year, because how are you going to pay? What kind of money are you making? Do you see the connection there? What kind of money are you going to be making if you're not working like the year prior? And so that's a release of debt. Verse 4, however, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess, if only you listen, obey to the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all this commandment which I am commanding you this day. So when do I get blessed by the Lord in the production that we, and then in our yield and in our crops and in the rain and in all the favorable things? When does that happen according to this text? What's that? When I listen and obey. Parents, have you ever had that conversation with their children? You maybe have had that conversation. Things will go well with you when you listen and obey, right? In the same way, God's having that conversation with his people. Again, this idea we are his children. And he's providing here in this way with this kind of year scenario. The God will bless you as he promised, verse 6, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow, and you will rule over many nations, and they will not rule over you. That would be nice, right? Verse 7, if there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns, in your land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need in whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart saying, the seventh year, the year of remission is near, I don't want to lend to my brother now, sixth year, because next year I'm not collecting anything from him. Do you see that? I don't want to lend. It's the sixth year. I don't want to lend anything to him. He's out in the square gathering food. I know he doesn't have anything. Why would I lend to him now? because he's not paying me next year. I'm not going to get that interest, or I'm not going to get, not interest rather, but I'm not going to get that investment back. I'm not going to get that money back until the following year. Are they supposed to be shrewd that way? Are they supposed to be shrewd in that way? No. Nope. It says, your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing, then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be sin to you. It will be a sin to you. You shall generously give him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your heart, your hand to your brother, and your needy to the poor in your land. If you want to write out here, and next to verse 11, Matthew chapter 26, verse 11, when Jesus says, the poor you will have with you always. Do you remember the situation that happened there? Mary was anointing Jesus' feet, and said, hey, you know, we could have sold that and used it for the poor or whatever. Hashtag, I want money out of the money back, right? Judas. But Jesus' answer was, the poor you will have with you always. Matthew 26, 11, Mark 14, 7, and John 12, 8 all mention this. Jesus directly quoting here this. So be freely, open your heart and open your hand to those individuals. So we have law for the poor. If your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, then he shall serve 6 years, but in the seventh year you shall set him free. And when you set him free, you shall not send him away empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally from your flock and from your threshing floor and from your wine vat. You shall give him as your Lord your gave. God blessed you also. Why, verse 15? Why? What's that? He saved them. What happened when they left Egypt? Do you remember, guys? When they left Egypt, did they leave empty-handed when they left Egypt? Oh, no. They left very, very rich. They left very, very wealthy with all the things that they took with them. And God here says, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this day. Do you see this correlation between what God does for his people and what we should do for others? Are you seeing a correlation here? God says, I'm going to be a blessing to people. I'm going to help them. I'm going to do these things. And God expects it of us as well. He expects it of his children to be in like kind and to do these things. And it's, are we going to 8:05? Yes, we are. That was the first bell. All right. So we see this here, and this we're supposed to take care there of these individuals. Remember that you were a slave. So furnish them liberally whenever they leave. Also, if they're slaves, they leave with nothing, how long do you think it's going to take before they're slaves again? See what I'm saying? Like, they're going to go right back into slavery. They've been given no way of getting out of slavery. And so this frees them and gives them means by which to help themselves. And so again, this idea of them being better off. It shall come about if he says to you, I will not go. I don't want to go. I'm better off being with you. And this is where you take him to the door, right? Take an awl and pierce it through, verse 17. If you want to write out here the other instances where we have this idea of you shall remember. You shall remember. In Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 19. Deuteronomy 10, 19. Deuteronomy 16, 12. Remember that you were a slave. This is a theme that's repeated. Deuteronomy 16, 12. And then Deuteronomy 24, 18 through 22. Deuteronomy 24, 18 through 22. This is also Exodus 23, verse 9. You may have this if you have other verses there in the center column reference or bottom footnote references where this was mentioned about going to the door with the awl. This is Exodus 23, verse 9. And when it's set him free, do this because the Lord your God will bless you in whatever you do. Again, that idea of blessing. He had been a double service as a hired man. This can be either way. He was cheaper than hiring day laborer guys to come out and do this. or he worked hard, twice as hard as a day laborer would have worked, because you had him, you know, the full 24 hours. So either way, you got more out of this guy than you would if you'd had to hire out somebody to come and do this work. So he deserves it. That's verse 18. Firstborn males, let's just finish chapter 15 here, and hopefully we'll do better next week. So we have this consecration of the firstborn males are born of your herd and of your flock. They don't work. Firstborn animal, you don't shear them, and you don't work those that are the firstborn. And you and your household shall eat every year before the Lord. And so there is this sacrificial, again, a sacrificial meal, not of the whole animal, but a part of the animal. But if there's any defect, verse 21, if there's any defect of the firstborn animal, anybody can eat it. It's not holy, it's not set apart, it's not sanctified for anything. Anybody can eat it, even the alien, if you want to sell it to him. Which he's the guy that's buying all the animals that just dropped dead for unapparent reasons. So that's the way to make some money on the side there, right? And this is the one also you can eat it within your gates. You don't have to go anywhere. So if it's a firstborn animal, but it's lame in some way, you can eat it anywhere in your gates, just like you would if you hunted it in the field, is the analogy here. Only you shall not eat its blood. You are to pour it out on the ground like water. All right, so we have some more dietary laws here concerning those firstborn things. Any thoughts, questions, comments, concerns? Yes, sir. Oh, no problem. Then that's connection there. The timing of those feasts were towards the end of crop production. And so that's correlated with the harvest.
And so to go back here and say, well, they gave a wheat root.
It is, yes. Everything is before it's a sacrificial. No problem. All right, thank you very much for your time tonight.